Señor presidente.
Mr. President, your excellencies, distinguished permanent representatives, ladies and gentlemen. During the last few months, President Donald Trump's administration has started to escalate aggression against Cuba through the implementation of non-conventional measures to prevent the arrival of fuel shipments to our country from different markets. By resorting to sanctions and threats against vessels, shipping companies, and insurance companies. The intent, apart from damaging Cuba's economy, is to harm the living standards of Cuban families. The United States government is responsible for announcing its decision in April this year to allow lawsuits to be filed before U.S. courts against Cuban and foreign entities under Title III of the Helms-Burton Act. Persecution of our banking and financial relations with the rest of the world has continued to intensify. Remittances sent to Cuban citizens have been restricted. The granting of visas has been reduced. Consular services have been limited. The agreement achieved between the best ball federations of both countries has been cancelled. Individual travel by American citizens has been stopped. Cruise ships' travels as well as direct flights to Cuban airports, except for Havana's airport, were prohibited. The chartering of planes and acquisition of technology or equipment containing more than 10% of U.S. components has been banned. Commercial promotional activities and cultural exchanges have been interrupted, and the U.S. government is responsible for having done this. It has aggressively intensified the extraterritorial implementation of its blockade policy against Cuba, thus affecting third states, their companies, and their citizens. It does not conceal its intention, which is economically to suffocate Cuba and to increase damage, scarcities, and hardships for our people. The U.S. government is likewise resolved to sabotage Cuba's international cooperation in the area of health. Several U.S. politicians and officials have begun a slanderous campaign to attack a program based on genuine ideas about South-South cooperation, which have been recognized by the international community. Mr. President, the ambassador of the United States has really been mocking the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Article 3, the right to life. The blockade has caused incalculable humanitarian damages. It is a flagrant, massive, and systematic violation of human rights. It qualifies as an act of genocide under Articles 2B and C of the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, adopted in 1948. There is not one single Cuban family that has not suffered the consequences of this. A Cuban child suffering from severe heart failure does not have access to the most advanced pediatric circulatory assist device simply because it is manufactured by the United States. Although several orders have been placed on several occasions to buy it, no response has yet been received from any of the companies that sell it. Because of prohibitions imposed against Cuba, a person with severe heart failure does not have access to ventricular assist devices, which enable patients in critical conditions to continue living until they can undergo a heart transplant or, in some cases, even recover their cardiovascular function. Because of the blockade, 16-year-old Brian Gomez Santisteban and 19-year-old Ladies Posada Canizares, who are currently going through a growth spurt, have no access to endoprosthesis, that is, internal prosthesis, that can then expand. Rather, they have to use fixed prosthesis so that they have to be operated on frequently so as to replace them. And this is because expandable prostheses are manufactured by the American company Stryker. The blockade also interferes with access to new cancer therapeutic drugs, which are manufactured by American pharmaceutical companies. Myra Lazarus Roque, a 57-year-old patient who suffers from kidney cancer, has not been able to receive a treatment with sunitinib, the best medication for treating this condition because it is only manufactured by the US company Pfizer. Thanks to the therapy she has received, based on pharmaceuticals manufactured by Cuba's biotech industry, she is now in good health. Then, 49-year-old Eduardo Hernandez Hernandez suffers from metastatic melanoma. The best medication is nivolumab, a pharmaceutical only manufactured by the American company Bristol-Myers Squibb, and we have no access to it. And so the patient has had to be treated with other alternative therapies. Year after year, the US delegation has said with enormous cynicism that its government supports the Cuban people. Could anybody believe that? The US government lies and distorts data about alleged licenses for operations to sell medicines and foodstuff to Cuba, and they are very unlikely to materialize. The United States delegation should explain to this assembly the conditions that it is imposing on Cuban purchases. Cuba has no access to credit, whether it be official or private. Cuba has to pay in cash for any merchandise that arrives in its port. The banks processing our transactions are being persecuted. Cuban vessels cannot be used in these operations. Who in the world can trade under such conditions? The successful and effective Cuban social model has provided equal opportunities, equity, and social justice to all Cubans, despite hostility and coercion. Mr. President, the United States government does not have the slightest moral authority to criticize Cuba or any other country when it comes to human rights. We reject the manipulation of human rights for political purposes, and we reject double standards. The US says it wants to tell the truth, but Article 3, the right to life, of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights calls for condemnation of the murder of civilians by US troops in different parts of the world, the use of torture, the assassination of Afro-Americans by the police, of migrants by border patrols, the death of unaccompanied minors under migration detention, the abusive and racially biased application of the death penalty, which is applied against minors and mentally disabled persons. All of this must be condemned. The impunity of the gun lobby is to blame for an increase in homicides, even among teenagers. During the first 8 months of this year, there were around 250 attacks involving the use of firearms, which took almost 1,000 victims, around a quarter of them fatal. In 2018, 100 US citizens died, and 274 suffered gunshot wounds daily. In the United States, there are 2.3 million people in prison. That accounts for one quarter of the world's prison population. 10.5 million detentions occur every year. Article 9 talks about arbitrary imprisonment. Every day, some 137 American citizens die from opioid overdose. Because of inadequate medical treatment, 251 die of heart disease, 231 die of cancer. A total of 170 preventable amputations are performed on a daily basis, and this relates to diabetes. Police repression, surveillance against immigrants, separation of families, the separation of more than 2,500 children from their parents, indefinite detention, the deportation of 21,000 people, brutal measures threatening the children of illegal immigrants who were raised and educated in the United States are all abhorrent practices, a violation of Article 1. And then Article 7 talks about due process. But the US government keeps inmates indefinitely in legal limbo without the right to a defense attorney, to a trial, or to due process at the Guantanamo Naval Base prison. Then Article 25 applies also. In the world's richest country, 40 million Americans live in poverty. Of them, 18.5 million live in extreme poverty. At the end of last year, 25.7% of people with disabilities lived in poverty. More than 500,000 are homeless. Article 23, the right to work. In late 2018, there were 6.6 million unemployed in the United States. Article 25, the right to health. 28.5 million US citizens lack health insurance, and millions of the lowest income persons will be left without it. Article 26, right to education. Quality education is not available to most people. Half of adults are unable to read a book at the 8th grade reading level. Equal opportunity in the United States is simply a pipe dream. Teenagers and youth are protesting because their government is depriving them of environmental rights. Then, equal treatment for men and women. Women earn approximately 85% of the salary earned by men in the United States. They will have to work 39 days more to catch up with them. And then sexual harassment allegations are becoming quite common. The average wealth of white families is 7 times as much as the wealth of Afro-descendant families. The infant mortality rate among Afro-American children below the age of 1 and of mothers during childbirth is double that of white children and mothers. And there is a pattern of racial differences among the American inmate population regarding the duration of imprisonment sentences. Corruption is rampant in the political system and the electoral model, and this runs counter to Article 21 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights on the right to participate in public affairs. There is an ever-growing gap between government decisions and the will of the people. Powerful and exclusive minorities, particularly corporate groups, determine the nature and the composition of the government, the Congress, the judiciary, and the law enforcement institutions. The US is violating flagrantly the human rights and civil liberties. The US is party to only 30% of human rights instruments. It doesn't recognize the right to life, peace, development, security, food, or the rights of children. Article 13, the freedom to travel. The blockade also violates the human rights and civil liberties of American citizens, whose freedom to travel to Cuba, the only destination in the world that is forbidden to them, is unjustly and arbitrarily restricted. And the US is responsible for this. Mr. President, in the course of the past year, the Office of Foreign Assets Control of the Treasury Department and other US agencies imposed fines on financial groups from third countries, such as the Italian UniCredit Group and the French Société Générale, for violating the system of sanctions against Cuba. Dozens of foreign banks were intimidated, so they limited or discontinued their financial relations with our country. Natural and juridical persons are also victims of the blockade. A German citizen who works at the Cuban embassy in Berlin was notified by Amazon of the cancellation of her account due to the blockade regulations. The illegal Helms-Burton Act guides US aggressive behavior against Cuba. Its essence is the stark aspiration of violating Cuba's right to self-determination and independence. It imposes U.S. legal authority on the commercial and financial relations of any country with Cuba, and it establishes an alleged supremacy of U.S. law and jurisdiction over third countries. The blockade as a whole is a serious violation of international law, of the Charter of the United Nations, and of the principles of the proclamation of Latin America and the Caribbean as a zone of peace. Not all governments comply with the illegal extraterritorial implementation of restrictions imposed by US law. In June 2019, a trial judge at the court in The Hague ruled in favor of a company, PAM International, based in Curaçao, in a lawsuit it had filed against the Dutch company Exact Software Delft, which is currently a subsidiary of the US company KKR, for enforcing several US blockade provisions against Cuba. Under that ruling, Exact Software Delft was required to continue offering its services to PAM International for the supply of software to Cuban companies and organizations. Examples like this show that there are antidote laws, established proceedings, and other ways and means to deal with the extraterritorial implementation of the US blockade against Cuba. Mr. President, accumulated damages resulting from the blockade of six decades amount to over $922 billion, taking into account the devaluation of the US dollar vis-à-vis the price of gold. At current prices, the policies has caused damages amounting to more than $138 billion. Throughout the years, the blockade has been the main impediment to the well-being and prosperity of generations of Cubans, and it continues to be the main obstacle to the economic development of the country. It is hindering an updating of Cuba's economic and social development model, implementation of its national plan for the year 2030, the 2030 Agenda, and sustainable development goals. The impact of the blockade, particularly restrictions on travel, affects the non-state sector of the Cuban economy particularly strongly. With revenue that Cuba has failed to receive from exporting goods and services, and costs associated with geographically shifting its trade pattern, which has forced us to maintain huge stocks, Cuba's national GDP would have grown by around 10% as an average annual rate. Annual damage is equivalent to the volume of direct foreign investment required for economic development. For almost six decades, Cuba has been victim of the most unjust, severe, and longest-lasting sanctions ever applied against any government. And the United States government is responsible for this. Despite all the difficulties our people are facing, Cuba has been able to counteract the economic blockade, its impact over six decades, and its impact on the potential of our country. It was thanks to the effectiveness of Cuba's socialist system, thanks to our state, our patriotism and revolutionary ideas, our solidarity, our people's consensus and unity, thanks to all of that, despite every constraint, Cuba has been able to overcome the serious challenges on it. Then there is the question as to whether some of the industrialized and technologically advanced countries would be able to endure such a prolonged, overwhelming onslaught while ensuring a modest but sustained economic growth, to preserve their economic development programs, move towards an economy based on services and knowledge, and ensure that all citizens on an equal basis could enjoy all human rights, which is what we have been able to achieve in Cuba. Mr. President, on many occasions, this assembly has rejected implementation of unilateral coercive measures, for they are contrary to international law and to the Charter of the United Nations. The United States is implementing a system of coercive measures against dozens of countries, and this is a trend which has become stronger under the current administration. As was said by our historical leader, Commander-in-Chief Fidel Castro Ruth, at the 50th anniversary of the United Nations, we should all aspire to a world without ruthless blockades that cause the death of men, women and children, young and old, like silent atom bombs. Mr. President, the United States government intends to exercise its imperialist domination in what they call our America. Once again, it's invoking the old aggressive Monroe Doctrine and gunboat diplomacy. It is redeploying its Fourth Fleet and increasing presence and military bases in the region. The definition of blockade policy is most clearly expressed in the infamous memorandum by the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, Lester Mallory, who said, and I quote, "There is no effective political opposition. The only foreseeable means of alienating internal support from the government is through disenchantment and disaffection based on economic dissatisfaction and hardship. Every possible means should be used promptly to weaken the economic life of Cuba. We should deny money and supplies to Cuba, decrease monetary and real wages, bring about hunger, desperation, and the overthrow of the government." End of quotation. The United States representative has offended this assembly with interventionist and unacceptable language in referring to the heroic people of Venezuela, its civic and military union, and the Bolivarian Chavista government headed by President Nicolas Maduro Moros, to whom we express unchanging solidarity. The United States government has resorted to false and slanderous arguments as pretexts to intensify aggression. May I say once again, neither threat nor blackmail will ever extract the least political concession from us. We will not back down from our determination to achieve a civilized relationship with the US government based on mutual respect. As our Army General Raul Castro said on April 10 last, before the National Assembly of People's Power, I quote, "Despite its immense power, imperialism does not have the capacity to crush the dignity of a united people who are proud of their history and of the freedom they have attained after so much sacrifice." End of quotation. Cuba recognizes the ethical and political abyss that exists between the United States government and its people, and we will do our best to develop profound and broad relations between Cuba and the people of this country. Mr. President, distinguished permanent representatives, distinguished delegates, we acknowledge with the deepest gratitude all those who have rejected the blockade imposed by the United States government against our country, and those who have always supported us in our ceaseless struggle to end that policy. As the President of the Republic of Cuba, Miguel Díaz-Canel, said to all Cubans on October last, I quote, "Intense and challenging days await us, but no one can take from us the confidence in the future which our parents have won by standing firm and which we owe to our children in our country. End of quotation. On behalf of the heroic, self-sacrificing and fraternal people of Cuba, I ask you all once again to vote in favour of the draft resolution contained in document A74L6, necessity of ending the economic, commercial and financial blockade imposed by the United States of America against Cuba. Thank you very much.